Robin Hood Radio presents Agriculture from Tucana Farms. Here's Mark Scherzer.
The first week or two after they arrive by way of the U.S. Post Office, our newly hatched turkey poults need nearly constant attention. To nurture them through this period, we make the trek up to the brooder room attached to the barn at least six times in the course of a day, even in the middle of the night. We raise and lower the heat lamps over the brooders therein as seems necessary. In the evening, we increase the number of heat lamps from one to two, and in the morning, we go back down to one as the day warms up. They need to be kept in an environment that's at or near 90 degrees at the beginning, simulating the heat under a mother turkey. And we have to calibrate the temperature to make sure they don't pile on each other, either in an effort to crowd into a warm place or to escape the heat lamp zone if it gets too warm. Piling on each other, we discovered in our early years, is a major source of fatalities. We are also constantly changing the water that's been heating up under the heat lamps and replacing it with cool, fresh water for them to drink. And then there are the constant rescue operations as we extract the poults' heads or wings that get stuck in awkward positions between the bars of the brooder cage or in feed trays, and rescuing those who have, in their usual exploratory mode, taken advantage of the open cage door and hopped out into the larger brooder room. Once stuck outside the brooding enclosure, they're at risk for not surviving because the warmth, the food, and water they need become inaccessible to them. An unusual rescue operation this week, a first, was saving a poult choking on a grass stem, one end of which was in its stomach while several inches of the stem dangled from its mouth. This constant attention is required because these birds are both quite fragile and extremely curious, a dangerous combination. We generally expect up to 10% mortality in the first weeks, and the one time we managed less than 5%, we felt pretty good about it. In this way, the turkey poults seem much closer to songbirds, their biological cousins, only 30% of which survive the first year of life, than they do to chicks, goslings, ducklings, and guinea keets we also raise. In contrast to the turkey poults, these domesticated birds generally arrive in robust health, with even a single fatality being unusual. Chicks thrive with just a warming plate, that wonderful Dutch heated plate on legs that baby chicks can get under at will, simulating a mother hen. Were we to use one for the turkeys, we feared that they would end up piling up underneath it. Last Saturday evening, I noticed the telltale signs of a weak poult, a little bourbon red that seemed to be having trouble standing up, and which was therefore getting trampled by the milling poults scurrying nonstop all around it. I reached into the brooder and held the poult in my hand, noting the relative coolness of its body, not the normal warm feeling of pulsating life. I carried it, encased in my hand, through the cool evening back to our kitchen, where I put it in a box under a closely set light bulb for heat and placed water and food beside it. As Peter saw me arrive, he said, "I've tried that so many times, and it almost never works when they're at that stage." And he was right. Within about 25 minutes, the little poult was lying on its side and no longer breathing. The speed with which the life left this poult is not unusual. Sunday morning, I checked the turkeys in the brooder room around 8 a.m., and all appeared well. I felt relieved that perhaps our spate of new arrival mortality had come to a close. I came back just 2 hours later because we had a major project of tagging new lambs to accomplish in the barn. In that two-hour period, unpreceded by any period of apparent weakness, another young poult, this time a Narragansett, had inexplicably died. That death was succeeded by several days without a further death, leading me to hope that the usual wave of mortality had run its course. But awareness of the fragility of these young lives is never far from my mind. Most living creatures have innate strength. They move assertively. They give off warmth, and their hearts of whatever size pulse and radiate force. They seek out nourishment and go after it voraciously. Lambs are a perfect illustration. They're up on their feet within 20 minutes of being born. They start finding their mother's teat to suckle on immediately, and they struggle and resist being picked up almost from the beginning. If they don't behave this way, you know there's a problem. At the tail end of our recent lamb surge, 20 of them born in the last 2 weeks, one of our ewes had a lovely set of brown twins. The larger, a male, quite robust, and a much smaller female, who was not so robust. She had trouble finding her mother's teat, and when she did ultimately feed, she did not gain weight. After several days, she remained thin, cool to the touch, and listless. And despite having an assiduous mother with apparently ample milk, she died on her fifth day of life. The line between vitality and robustness on the one hand and fragility and vulnerability on the other may be a subtle one, but as fellow creatures, we seem to have an innate sense of when it has been crossed, and therefore when the risk of death is significant. My current focus on fragility, in contrast with robustness, may have much to do with life beyond the farm. For one thing, there's the political environment in which we all live, and which I can't help but obsess about. I always assumed that we live in the world's most robust democracy, but in the space of just 18 months, I've realized that our democracy is in fact quite fragile. It has not taken very much, just a torrent of lies and a destructive bent by a single chief executive with a small group of enablers to have substantially weakened our fundamental governing institutions and principles. And more particularly in my own life, fragility and robustness have become an unwelcome concern and theme. While planning on attending my 45th college reunion, I checked the list of signups from my very small college class of around 170 men, and was disappointed not to see the names of one classmate and his wife, who I enjoyed spending time with at past reunions. When I wrote to them to express regret that they wouldn't be there, I was devastated to receive the reply that they'd be absent because he's undergoing treatment for a usually fatal brain cancer. And since then, I've been wondering whether other of my classmates, who almost universally seemed fairly young and vital 5 years ago, will have crossed that line from robustness to fragility, if not frailty, this year. How many, I wondered, are now in that danger zone, and how readily observable will the change be? It would seem that the fragility and vulnerability of some newborns has its parallel at the other end of the life cycle. I'd like to accept that precarious state as a natural stage of existence, but accepting this inevitability doesn't erase the sadness.
Peter Davies and his partner Mark Scherzer are proprietors of Tricana Farm, specializing in heritage breeds of livestock on their 40-acre farm in Germantown, New York. Peter also presides over Tricana Odyssey, in which he customizes cultural tours of turkey for small groups, which he calls an insider's view of turkey. And his third hat is Tricana Gallery of old and antique kilims, which he operates in the Wall Street area of Manhattan. Mark presides over his law firm, Mark Scherzer Law Office, which specializes in health law, also in the Wall Street area. Their farm website? TurkanaFarms.com. Their email, farm@TurkanaFarms.com, or 518-537-3815.